well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with us today on a 2A Tuesday. We're going to be talking with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio here in just a second. The DOJ has formally released its proposed rule on providing basically a path to restoration for those who have had their Second Amendment rights taken away. It's a pretty lengthy rule. You can find it at the Federal Register. We're going to talk a little bit about it with Mark coming up in just a couple of minutes, as well as some of the other big Second Amendment news stories of the day. I will say that from what I've read, the rule looks pretty good. I just have a couple of concerns. Primarily, I've not been able to find any sort of deadline for the DOJ to act on these applications. So they're setting up a process for the first time in decades where people can actually apply to have their rights restored. But again, I've not been able to find anything in the rule that says the DOJ has to act within 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 120 days of receiving that completed application. I did see somewhere if you submit an application, you don't have all of your ducks in a row and it gets kicked back to you, I think you've got 30 days to fix that application and then send it back to DOJ before having to start the process all over again. But I mean, we've got the DOJ Civil Rights Division right now investigating the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. They're talking about investigating, I don't know if they formally opened up an investigation into Washington, D.C.'s Metropolitan Police Department, in terms of delays for processing concealed carry applications. So clearly the DOJ is aware that, you know, some people's rights can be stuck in a bureaucratic limbo. And I would hate to see the DOJ come up with a process where people are essentially excluded from using the courts to apply to get their rights back. They can't litigate. They can't sue. Instead, they have to go through the DOJ, but the DOJ doesn't have to act in these applications. Now, I'm not saying that the Trump administration would be problematic, but the next time you've got an anti-gun administration in place, all they have to do is just tuck those applications in a drawer somewhere. And then, once again, folks are denied any real possibility of relief in terms of having their Second Amendment rights restored. So that was the gist of my public comment to the proposed rule. I just want to see some sort of deadline in place. I also want to see some sort of formal appeals process. I've not been able to find that in the proposed rule either. So if you are denied, at least the way I read it, the only recourse is to sue the DOJ. And so if the one of the goals here is to cut down on prohibited person cases that the DOJ is having to defend and instead have this process by which those prohibited persons can regain their rights, seems to me like you'd want some sort of formal appeals process to cut down on litigation, because otherwise you're just going to see a flood of lawsuits from people who have been denied. They believe that they've been denied unfairly. So anyway, that was the gist of my public comments. I want to find out what Mark Walters has to say about this and more. So sit back, take a look and a listen. Mark, how you doing, man? Thanks so much for joining me on the program today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Cam. Always a pleasure. How you doing, my brother?
I am good. It's not Mondays with Mark, but it is a 2A Tuesday with Mark. And you know what? I think that's just as good. So you know, we saw the Department of Justice, they've talked about this for weeks. We had the unpublished rule, I guess, drop on Monday. Now this has formally been published in the Federal Register. So the clock is ticking on this proposed rule that would essentially reestablish a process by which people can apply to have relief from disability, their federal firearms disability, so they can regain their rights. And we know that, you know, this has existed on paper the entire time, right? But this has been defunded essentially by Congress for what, like 30 years?
Yeah. And it's been flying underneath the radar as well. You and I talked about it on my show. It's for some reason, this is one of those weird things that doesn't seem to be getting the publicity that it should be getting. And I question, why is that? What's the motive here? The DOJ is quietly doing this, but it's almost like they are intentionally not seeking coverage about it, because to me, the only thing I can theorize, Cam, and I could be way off base, and I'd love to hear you hear your thought on this. I don't think they want the Democrats coming, oh, the Republicans, the administration, the Trump DOJ is now wanting felons to carry guns. You know, this is a nugget that in today's day and age with media the way it is, I'm just wondering if that's why it's kind of flying under the radar. They're going to let people like you and me and others get this word out.
Yeah.
And rely on other areas so the government doesn't seem to be pushing this because the publicity could be so bad. It, you know, as much as I hate to say it, there's a midterm coming up. There's a lot in play here. Trump's got his fingers out in a million different directions, as you know, a lot of rabbit holes. Do they really need that? So then you wonder, well, if that were the case, why are they doing it now? Why is the timing? So there's a lot of weird stuff going on. I don't have the answers to that. I wish I did.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think you're right. I mean, there is a political calculation here, right? I think this is one of the reasons why, you know, Democrats who are typically soft on crime, they've not pushed for a restoration of rights process, right? They want, heck, they want people to be able to vote while they're serving their prison sentence, but they don't want to provide a process by which people can get their Second Amendment rights back. And I think that too is partly political, right? They didn't want Republicans saying, oh, look, they're trying to arm criminals. So yeah, I suspect that you're right. We saw this with, you know, the DOJ did provide relief for, I believe, 10 individuals. Earlier in President Trump's term, one of them famously Mel Gibson, right? And we saw a lot of headlines about that. Why is Mel Gibson getting his gun rights back? So I suspect you're right that they don't want to see headlines about the Trump organization or the Trump administration arming criminals, right? Yeah. But if you look at the particulars here, there are certain categories, basically any violent crime, any crime of violence defined by federal law, there is a presumption of denial, basically. You have to show that you are pretty extraordinary in order to regain your rights if you've been convicted of a violent crime. There's also, I believe, a 10-year window for even people who've not committed a violent offense, but you've committed, let's say, drug trafficking. You're supposed to wait 10 years before you can apply for relief from disability, 5 years for other crimes. So there are some guardrails, right? I mean, there are some crimes where, again, like chances are you're not going to get approved. You're not going to regain your rights. If you were committed a crime, if the DOJ believes you're still a danger to yourself or danger to the community, this isn't just, you know, hey, fill out this piece of paper and you get your gun rights back, right? That's not what's going on here. But at the same time, in this proposed rule, I thought it was really interesting. The DOJ estimates that there will be 1 million people in the first year who would apply to have their rights restored. So we're not talking about, you know, just a handful of individuals here.
Yeah, and it's also very subjective. As I'm listening to you, I think you're right, but it's also very subjective, right? Who makes the determination that somebody's going to be a threat down the road?
It's the AG. I mean, it's right, entirely in our hands, right?
And, you know, under what guidelines is that decision going to be made? What are they deciding is a quote unquote violent felony, right? You look at the Lautenberg Amendment, somebody convicted of misdemeanor domestic violence, for example, who might not have committed any violence. The Democrats will say he shows Democrat or she shows violent tendencies. Who makes these calls? There's so much at play here. Now, look, I could argue that I don't care what your crime was. If you have completed your sentence and it's done and the DOJ has released you from federal prison or you've been released from state penitentiary, no matter what your crime was, that your rights should be restored. If they've deemed you've done your time and you've paid your dues, I could make that argument that somebody who shot somebody during the commission of a violent felony when they were 18, got out when they were 50 and served their sentence should have their rights restored. Now, you know, that's an uphill climb. Depending on what the particular political climate of the day is, right?
Right.
Could be seen as an uphill climb, depending on how the other side would want to view that and would want to attack you politically for that. But that argument could be made. So again, it's all very subjective and it's very strange. What I sense here is, again, that I just get the idea that they're not seeking a lot of publicity on this, that I think they're just going to let this kind of skate under the radar. I've got a neighbor who can't wait for this to happen, who was convicted of a very low-level felony at 18 years old. I've got friends from high school that said they were driving from Michigan to California to start a life when they graduated high school and got caught with weed when they crossed into the California border, that were convicted of felonies, that are looking forward as they've lost their gun rights. Clearly, those people should not lose their gun rights for the rest of their lives. But then when you go to that quote-unquote violent felony, and this, you know, this brings up red flags. We could go down that rabbit hole, right?
Right.
Who makes the decision on red flags that somebody's going to be? How do you see into the future that somebody's going to be a threat? So I don't know. It's fascinating. It's going to be fun to watch. But a new DOJ down the road. These are rules, man. These are not laws. So this is
right. And that's the thing. I mean, so, you know, on the one hand, I think it's great that there is likely to be a process, assuming this rule gets approved. I think it's great that there is going to be a process by which people can apply to have their rights restored. It's a $20 application fee, which is a hell of a lot less than paying for an attorney, you know, fighting in the courts. Right. So in that sense, it's better. But as you say, this is a rule. So it could A, be repealed by an anti-gun administration. But they could also use this rule to, you know, mess around with prohibited persons. Like, one of the problems that I had, and actually I included this in my public comment to this proposed rule, I can't find any deadline for the DOJ to act on an application. So you can submit your application, but the way I read it, there's nothing stopping an anti-gun attorney general from just putting that application in a drawer somewhere and forgetting about it.
I saw the same thing. I noticed the same thing. I haven't yet commented publicly, but will do so since it's now up. Again, I don't know, but again, there's a lot of room to play here.
Mm-hmm.
With DOJ, and I'm very skeptical unless I see something from a court decision, really a Supreme Court decision, or some type of legislation. It's all a game.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of my other concerns, right, is that DOJ is already arguing in some of these. We've got a number of prohibited cases, prohibited person cases that the Supreme Court's going to consider when they come back from their summer recess. Yeah. But there was a oral arguments in a Third Circuit case yesterday. I think it was Williams versus Bondi. This guy had a DUI conviction in 2005. Lost his right to own a gun because of that DUI conviction. He's arguing that, you know, as a nonviolent felon, he shouldn't have lost his rights in the first place. DOJ's main argument is, listen, this guy should use this process that we're coming up with. He doesn't need to file a lawsuit. We've got this process that's coming up. I don't want to see. I mean, listen, Mark, you and I know. I mean, there's some constitutional problems with Section 922G, right? And all of its prohibitions. So I also don't want to see this rule or in this process be used as a way to avoid scrutiny of federal statutes that I believe do violate our right to keep and bear arms. And that's another concern, right, is that the DOJ will just say all these challenges, they're moot because there's a way for these people to theoretically get their rights back.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because the administration's kind of caught. You've got the start of a new administration in January, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as you and I've talked about some of these cases where the DOJ is now having to decide on how to respond to some of these cases or not respond to some of these cases that were brought, that are now Bondi, that were, okay, Garland, for yep. example. And they find themselves in here under this Trump directive as to go in, take a look at these cases, make decisions on which ones we're going to handle, how we're going to handle. It's a massive job. And it's a no-win situation because Bondi's going to get hammered from both sides and all sides on this. And she'll get hammered from both sides from just our side alone. Why didn't she take this case? Why didn't she do this? Why didn't they do that? Why aren't they going? We've talked about a couple of those cases out of the Fifth Circuit
mm-hmm.
when it comes to suppressors, et cetera. What are they going to do here? It's going to take some time to see this play out overall. And I wouldn't want to be Pam Bondi in that situation right now. But yeah, I question this too. Let's look at it. Let's flip over to Newsom. I know you and I want to talk about Newsom, but this is a good segue here. Would Newsom support some of these felons, nonviolent felons, getting their gun rights back? Maybe he wants to give them a new cig. Right?
He says, I'm not an anti-gun guy, right? That's what he says. He says he's not ideologically opposed to the Second Amendment. So sure, maybe in theory. I got to tell you, I mean, first of all, I don't want to throw shade at Sean Ryan. It was a 4-hour-long conversation with Gavin Newsom, and I realized that he wasn't there to necessarily push back on what Newsom was saying. But when Newsom said, I'm not anti-gun, I'm not ideologically opposed to the Second Amendment, Mark, it took me 5 seconds to Google Gavin Newsom complaining about gun culture, complaining about gun owners, complaining that owning a firearm makes this country a more dangerous place. And I would have loved to have seen Sean Ryan's producer maybe whisper in his ear, like, maybe just bring this up, Sean, just see what the governor has to say about this.
I would like to think that Sean Ryan or his producer were aware of the things that you're talking about. All right. Now, what's interesting is like I didn't even have to Google the stuff up because we've covered it so many times on Armed American Radio. We got Alan Gottlieb on the program on Sunday. And I said, Alan, when you heard him say that, I said, I've got to ask you this question. I have a pretty good feeling I know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What state are you involved in court fighting anti-Second Amendment cases more than any other state in the nation? He goes, oh, absolutely. That's California. What? I think there are 13 to 15 cases ongoing right now in the state of California.
Yeah.
And we're filing, and we've been winning victories in the Ninth Circuit, by the way.
Yeah.
California. Now you're going to see en banc requests and you're going to see, you know, other things happen. Now you've got Trump. Maybe that Ninth Circuit can flip again in due time. You know, Trump did a pretty good job of evening it out. Then we have 4 years of Biden. But look, man, you know, when I heard Sean Ryan say, this is a California compliant SIG P365. I said, stop the tape. Stop the tape. What does California compliant mean? Okay. So the mere fact that gun has to even be California compliant should open a lot of eyes. But if you've watched that interview like I have time after time after time, I see a very effeminate Gavin Newsom sitting there with his, not that there's anything wrong with that, sitting there with his legs crossed. He's a very dangerous politician. He's very smooth. He's a fantastic liar. He knows it. He does it with impunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, I believe the guy could pass lie detector tests because he's so good at what he does. But this makes him a very, very dangerous politician because a lot of people see this and fall for this guy and don't know the things that we're talking about now. Don't know the Second Amendment Foundation has sued him countless dozens of times over.
Right.
There's all of that involved here.
No, you're absolutely right. And again, that's why, you know, I would have liked to have seen a little bit of pushback, at least from Sean Ryan. I know that's not how he does his podcast. But again, when somebody is lying to your face, when it is as blatant as that, yeah, call them out because the mainstream media is not going to do it, right? Democrats are going to do it. Democrats, I mean, listen, and as you say, Gavin Newsom's never met a gun control bill that he hasn't liked, right?
Of course.
I don't think he's ever vetoed a single gun control bill that's gotten to his desk, not once.
Not that I'm aware of. Not absolutely true statement. I'm glad you brought that up. Not that I'm aware of. And another thing about Sean Ryan and you know, giving him the gun, et cetera, not only is the mainstream media not going to call him out on that, the mainstream media is going to use that to give him a platform to talk about how he's not anti-gun.
Right.
We know he's going to run.
Yeah.
We know the guy's going to run, which is why Gavin Newsom is pivoting this way on the Second Amendment and this gun. So I got to wonder, and I would love to ask your opinion, why do you believe Ryan even gave him the gun? What was the point of that?
Well, yeah. So, I you know, it's interesting. I mean, so Ryan said a buddy of his at SIG has suggested this, which also,
I mean, Jason Wright, by the way, let's name names because he said it was Jason. That's Jason Wright at Sig Sauer. Okay.
Question one. You know, first of all, I wonder what the Second Amendment community thinks about Jason and Sig offering Gavin Newsom a gun personally. But, you know, I mean, of all of the people who should be gifted a firearm, Gavin Newsom's like way the hell down on my list. But, yeah,
unless there's some type of weird ulterior motive here to make him say, because
well, I think for Ryan, it was a viral moment, right? You're giving an anti-gun governor a pistol. What's he going to do? How's he going to react? How's he going to respond? So, I mean, I think from Sean Ryan's perspective, yeah, why not? I mean, I'm not paying for the gun. Sig's giving it to me to give to Gavin Newsom. No money out of my pocket. Yeah, let's throw it out there. Let's see what he does. Right, exactly.
Click.
And
now look.
And look, we're talking about it, right?
That's the whole point. You and I are sitting here talking about this. CCRKBA, SAF got press releases out about it. Well, what's interesting is Gottlieb pulled it out in a great way, as Alan always does, when he mentions that, well, he's going to have the gun shipped. He's going to have to wait the however many 10 days it is. Mm-hmm. Then he's going to have to go through all the application. Or is he? He's the governor. Is
right.
he? You know, I don't know. I would, but we follow that up. Alan followed that up with it. I couldn't help but agree more. Wouldn't you love to see him? Let's show some videos of Gavin on the range. Let's see how adept he is with his new SIG P365. I mean, this is comical all the way around, but
you will see that footage. I'll predict you will see that footage at some point after Gavin Newsom announces that he's running for president or at least sometime in 2027 or 2028. We'll see, you know, a 10-second snippet of Gavin Newsom at the range. It'll be a close-up of him firing, and then it'll pan over to the target. It'll be a cut to the target, right? And that's what you'll see.
I kind of hope it's footage because Gavin Newsom strikes me as the type of guy that would probably put on the orange jumpsuit with some camo with the tags on it, kind of like a John Kerry, and use that to show himself deer hunting with his new P365. That's something I think, you know, there's so much fun we could have with this. But
maybe he and Kamala will go out to the range together. She can bring her Glock if it hasn't been banned by the state of California by then, right?
Yeah, she can bring her Glock. Yeah. This is. They just hand it to us every day, don't they, Cam?
It is amazing, you know. And the frustrating thing about this, Mark, is that, you know, Gavin Newsom, I mean, he is the quintessential politician to put his finger in the wind, right, and see what direction it's blowing. So when he says, I'm not anti-gun, I'm not ideologically opposed to the Second Amendment, that to me is a recognition that if you come out and you say, yeah, I don't think people should own guns, you're not going to be a successful politician running for president. However, that doesn't mean that he's actually going to do anything to respect the Second Amendment, right? It's all lip service. It's nothing more than this veneer of support or respect or even an acknowledgement of our right to keep and bear arms. But there's nothing of substance whatsoever. And that's what's so frustrating, right, is that, okay, so we get the Democrats to acknowledge that, yeah, you can't be an out-and-out gun banner and be a successful presidential candidate. But instead of actually shifting their position to respect our right to keep and bear arms, they just engage in this public relations campaign to hide their true views.
Yeah. Well, see, Gavin Newsom is smart enough to know. The guy's very intelligent. You call him what you want, okay? The guy is the quintessential politician. That's why. What's what makes him so dangerous. There's a lot of the public at large that will follow him, particularly these people suffering from TDS after 4 years of Trump. You know, I mean, this is going to be fun to watch. But Gavin Newsom knows that ABC and NBC, so we can CBS, MSDNC, and CNN, LOL, will never, ever, ever cover it the way you just described it and defined it. Mm-hmm. He knows that. He absolutely knows they won't. The mainstream media is not even covering some of Hunter's interviews. Mainstream media is just, you know, again, these are lies of omission, and he knows that they will play his game, which makes him a very scary, you know, people, you know, you don't fear Gavin Newsom as a politician in 2028. You do that at your own peril. I'm warning you, the guy is dangerous and he's going to have a ton of money behind him. And he talks very smooth. So we need to pay very careful attention to this clown.
Absolutely. And I know you'll be doing a lot of that on Armed American Radio. Of course, folks can tune in weekdays, every day except for Saturday.
Every day live except for Saturday, yeah. But we're, you know, a lot of stations run us on Saturdays delayed. So somewhere out there, 7 days a week, this voice is booming somewhere, irritating and aggravating somebody.
Well, listen, man, I always appreciate when you spend some time with us. Looking forward to getting a chance to see you in person in Salt Lake City at the Gun Rights Policy Conference coming up here at the end of September. You are going to be emceeing that event.
I am, yeah. That's a heavy load picking up after, you know, emceeing following the steps of Julianne, Alan Gottlieb's wife. But yeah, we'll be emceeing all day Saturday. And just so for viewers, September 26th through the 28th, come out and see us. Come out and meet me. Come out and meet Cam. Come out and meet AWR. A lot of your guests will be there speaking. Alan Gottlieb, come out, say hello, shake paws. It's free to attend. We got cheap room rates for you. It's at the Marriott downtown Salt Lake City, September 26th through the 28th. You got to get yourself there, but it's everything at the event, including the happy hours and everything, are all free. So come out and hang out with us and see which direction we're going as we pivot from defense to offense going into the future, which is really nice.
Yep, absolutely. I'm going to be talking about playing the long game at GRPC, nice. But again, there are going to be a ton of great speakers, and Mark's going to be there. I'll be there. And again, a whole bunch of other folks. So yeah, hope we get to see you there as well. Mark, I know we'll be talking between now and then, but thank you again for coming on the program today. It's always good seeing you, sir.
And in case nobody's told you this yet today, Cam, I love you. And there's not a thing you can do about it, brother.
Thank you, Mark. Right back at you, man. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. See you. Thanks for having me.
My thanks once again to Mark for joining us on the program. Looking forward to talking with him once again in the very near future. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report from Los Angeles, California, Hollywood club crash. What we know about the driver, the man who shot him. This is from the Los Angeles Times, talking about that. I don't even want to call it a crash. I mean, it sounds like this was intentional. Right. Where a guy runs his car into a crowd of people outside of a nightclub in Hollywood on Saturday. Dozens of people injured. After the collision, the L.A. Times reports the driver pulled from the vehicle by the crowd, was assaulted. One person pulling a gun and shooting the driver, according to the LAPD. That individual has not been identified, still outstanding. But the driver, identified as Fernando Ramirez, was taken into custody at the scene. As it turns out, he's well known to law enforcement. The 29-year-old was apparently thrown out of the club earlier that evening and then returned to the area in a vehicle around 2 a.m., again, hitting vendors, dozens of club goers, multiple medical emergencies. As of Sunday, he was listed in stable condition after being taken into surgery. He was arrested on suspicion of assault with a deadly weapon with force likely to produce great bodily injury. But as the LA Times reports, before the Saturday morning attack, Ramirez had already spent several months behind bars. January 10th, 2020, he was sentenced to 4 years in prison after a jury found him guilty of battery with serious injury, violation of civil rights, and a hate crime enhancement for attacking a Black Whole Foods employee. But an appeals court, a year later, overturned part of the verdict after the court found that a recorded conversation with an officer violated Ramirez's Miranda rights. So they reversed the civil rights violation, the hate crime enhancement, vacated that sentence. They upheld the aggravated battery conviction because they said it was not affected by the Miranda error for some reason. And so his four-year sentence was essentially nullified. I mean, it sounds like he got out at that point with time served. In 2020, he was also convicted of a battery in 2019, battery upon a police officer and resisting arrest. That landed him in jail, well, at least landed him with a 180-day jail sentence. In California, that's closer to 90 days, maybe even less than that. In 2021, after those convictions, he was convicted of assault with great bodily injury, as well as two counts of resisting arrest. And he got 194 days in jail and a year of probation. Also in 2021, he was he pled guilty to a corporal injury upon a spouse and was sentenced to 3 years probation and 234 days in jail. So that's four convictions in the span of 2 years and not much to show for it, right? Jail sentences of less than a year for every one of those crimes. And again, with California's, you know, good time credit, the state doesn't want to put people behind bars. They want to get them out as quickly as possible. So it's not just, you know, one day off of your sentence for every day that you don't assault a corrections officer. I mean, it generally is even more than that. So you don't serve even 50% of what you've been sentenced to. So there are multiple opportunities to deal with Ramirez. These, again, these weren't ticky-tack crimes, right? This wasn't jaywalking. This wasn't, you know, even shoplifting. This was battery with serious injury. This was battery on a police officer, assault with great bodily injury. Again, I mean, those three, oh, and corporal injury upon a spouse. Four violent crimes in 2 years. And again, not much to show for it. All right, on to today's armed citizen story. An interesting one out of Cleveland, Ohio, the I-Team, which I believe is Channel 8, Fox 8 in Cleveland, Ohio. Charges dropped. Accused killer found to be battered woman. So the woman in question was actually facing criminal charges. She was facing murder charges and had been behind bars for about a year before prosecutors decided, you know what, this was self-defense because there was a pattern of domestic abuse. This happened on Monday, the decision to drop the charges. R. Tian Higdon was basically cleared of all charges. After being originally arrested and charged with murder in June of last year, after police said that Higdon shot and killed her lover, Sean Ayers Jr. The Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office, according to Fox 8 in Cleveland, decided to dismiss the charges after a self-defense committee reviewed photos, witness statements, text messages, and psychological reports. In fact, both psychologists that were appointed or hired, I guess, by the defense and the prosecution said that Higdon essentially was suffering from batterwoman syndrome. She had been previously assaulted by Ayers. Prosecutors said that she had been assaulted before while she was pregnant. And they don't think that they could prove that this was not self-defense. So Joe Buckley, her defense attorney, said the police had been called in the past. There were times that she went to relatives in the past. And he said an incident like this cannot just be seen as one, you know, isolated moment in time. Buckley said that she reasoned to believe she had to use deadly force to protect herself from somebody who was physically abusing her. Channel 8 in Cleveland quoted an email from the Cuyahoga County prosecutor saying both experts that the Cuyahoga County Court Psychiatric Clinic conducted at the request of the state of Ohio and one of the requests of the defense diagnosed the defendant with batterwoman syndrome. The Cuyahoga County Court Psychiatric Clinic report states the results of the present evaluation offer an abundance of data. To say, and then again, this was the state reviewing this, right? An abundance of data suggests that Ms. Higdon was the victim of interpersonal violence in a relationship with a victim or a battered woman. The collective data indicate that Mrs. Higdon reasonably believed that her life was in danger during the altercation with the victim that ultimately resulted in her death. So after spending more than a year behind bars, Higdon is now free, will not be facing charges in the shooting death of her boyfriend. All right, on to today's good deed of the day. In the right place at the right time, unable to do the right thing. A group of I got boaters, lake goers. I don't know. They were there at the Lake Texarkana on the Oklahoma-Texas border when a man from Ada, Oklahoma, went under the water. Don't have a lot of information about this, except for the good news from the Ada News. According to the Oklahoma Highway Patrol, 48-year-old Jerry Bailey was standing in about 4 feet of water in Lake Texoma. I said this was Lake Texarkana. I'm sorry. This is Lake Texoma. I'm not even sure if there is a Lake Texarkana. But anyway, Lake Texoma on the border of Oklahoma and Texas. It was this past weekend, about 6:30 in the afternoon. All of a sudden, Bailey went under the water for what police say were unknown reasons. So they don't know what happened yet, but they do know that witnesses were able to pull Bailey out of the water. At that point, he was not breathing. So they ended up performing CPR on him, were able to restore his breath, were able to get a pulse back. He was then transported by boat to a resort there on the lake before he was taken to Mercy Hospital in Ardmore, Oklahoma, not far away. And it sounds like at this point, he's going to be okay. This was one of a couple of incidents at Lake Texoma over the weekend. Unfortunately, 25-year-old Julio Aguilar IV of Sherman, Texas, did drown on Saturday afternoon. He jumped from a moving boat, went underwater, and never resurfaced. That happened, I guess, just a couple of hours before Jerry Bailey went under the water. And sadly, again, Aguilar passed away by drowning. But to Jerry Bailey, again, looks like he's going to recover and be all right, thanks to the quick thinking of those witnesses there at Lake Texoma. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. And don't forget, on Wednesdays, we do our weekly live chat for our VIP Gold and VIP Platinum members. You can be a part of it. It's Hot Airs, Ed Morrissey, and I. It's one of my favorite parts of the work week. It's a great time. We do it at 1:30 Eastern every Wednesday afternoon. And again, you can join us. All you have to do is sign up to be a VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. If you go to bearingarms.com/subscribe... and use the promo code FIGHT, you can get 60% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. Every level of support comes with its own benefits. And no matter which one you choose, I really do appreciate it, because your support means a lot. But we would love to have you in that live chat on Wednesday afternoons. It's always a lot of fun, and we'd love to see you there. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe and be free.